Do you feel like you need God's encouragement and wisdom throughout the week to take hold of His promise to fly like an eagle? You come to the right place. Welcome to Eagles on the Hill. Let's join our host, Pastor Jeff Scheich.
Hey people, I am your host, Pastor Jeff Scheich. Thanks for joining us on this edition of the podcast. Well, it's been a long, long time, I think, since I've done an update on Israel, Hamas, and now Hezbollah and Syria and all the rest. And so people have been asking me to do that again. So I wanted to do that again today for you. This may be your first update on those things, or it may be one that you've heard before. But now, of course, a lot of things have happened since the last time I've done this. I want to encourage you to share the podcast with your friends, whether it be on Spotify or other kinds of audio platforms, or whether it be on YouTube. YouTube will be the perhaps easiest, well, not easiest, but best way to view this or listen to it, because of the illustrations, the maps that'll be on the screen as we talk. You'll be able to see it a lot better, but you'll be able to understand it. I'll try to make it understandable, even if you are not able to see the maps that we're showing on the YouTube version of the podcast. All right, so let's toss a map up on the screen for those on YouTube, and then I'll describe it for those listening to just the audio of this, and we'll walk around and see what we got. Just want to set the scene of the nations we're dealing with to start with. So first of all, of course, Israel is in the center of this map. It's a very, very small country. They say it's about the size of the state of New Jersey, so pretty small. It looks to me like it's even smaller than New Jersey if you take out the West Bank. But on the map here, we have highlighted for you Jerusalem, which is just on the border of what's called the West Bank and the main part of Israel. And then Tel Aviv is on the coast, the Mediterranean coast. So there you have that. To the southwest, there is a little strip of land called the Gaza Strip. And that's been in the news, of course, since, well, for a long time, but since October 7th of last year, for sure. And so the Gaza Strip is there. We'll talk about the status of things there in a moment. Swinging around, of course, south of the Gaza Strip is Egypt. We're not going to really talk about Egypt very much today. Egypt is in Africa, so it's not in Asia. It's in Africa, but nevertheless shares a long border with Israel and with Gaza, and a very contested border at that, especially on the Gaza Strip and the Philadelphia corridor. Moving around to the east, we have the country of Jordan, and we'll talk about the country of Jordan and some of the challenges of that nation. And then heading north, so now we're up in Syria. This is to the northeast of Israel, the country of Syria. That's the country that's been in the news the most the last 10 days or so. And then heading over between Syria and the Mediterranean Sea is the country of Lebanon. So-called country, it's really a failed state. And that becomes a challenge. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. Now, I want to just kind of expand out from this a little bit here to get a few more countries that play an important role in what goes on here that you hear about in the news. We'll start up top in the north. So north of Syria, a long border, I think it's, 600-mile long border or something like that. It's very long, is the country of Turkey. Turkey is part of NATO. So you would think it's an ally of the United States, and in certain circumstances, I suppose it might be. However, of late, it has really leaned more, been taken over more by people who are very sympathetic to Islamists. It is an Islamic nation, and the leaders of Turkey currently view themselves as kind of the founders of the next caliphate. So Turkey has really, over the last 10 or 20 years, swung away from NATO and become very much of a challenge on the international scene in terms of the direction of its government and the policies, the things that it tries to follow. To the east of Syria and Jordan, you have the country of Iraq. Of course, Iraq was in the news for the last 20 years as the United States has had a presence there. I don't know that we have much of a presence there anymore. But Iraq has been in the news. But the point we need to know for the purposes of this discussion is that Iraq borders Syria in particular. On the other side of Iraq, to the east of Iraq, is the huge country of Iran. And of course, Iran is in the news all the time. So you have these three countries kind of lined up. Iran in the east, over to Iraq, and then over to Syria, And then we'll add a fourth country, which becomes important, Lebanon. So just picture that going right to left on the map. Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon. All right, so let's dive in. Let's go back here to this zoomed in map, and let's dive into what has happened. This could be a whole college course, I suppose, but we're going to do this in about 20 minutes, I hope. So we're going to have to keep this a little bit limited. But let's dive into what's been going on since October 7th, 2023. Iran is the major player. They're the ones who foment evil around the region. They are a Shiite kingdom. They are so Islam is divided into primarily two branches, Sunni and Shia. They hate each other. The primary Shiite or Shia country is Iran. The rest of the Muslims in the Middle East primarily are Sunni, and they do not get along. So that's important to realize that that Islam is not a monolithic block. Shiite is one section. It's the very much smaller section of Islam that's centered in Iran. And then you have Sunni Islam, which is really centered in Saudi Arabia, but branches out from there. But Saudi Arabia is where is the religion of Islam began, where Muhammad lived. And so that's where Mecca and Medina is, the holy sites, the two main holy sites there in Saudi Arabia. So they are Sunni. And the terrorism that we have experienced in the West, 9/11, the bombing of the World Trade Center, that kind of stuff, the terrorism we've experienced has been primarily Sunni terrorism. Even though 1979 revolution in Iran brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power, and that's Shiite. Our issues in the West have been primarily with Sunni terrorism. All right. Okay. Let's begin then, October 7th, 2023. Hamas in the Gaza Strip is allied. They are Sunni, but they are allied with Iran, Shia. So it's not a natural alliance. They would not normally naturally get along. What brings them together is who they're against. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So what brings them together is their anti-Israel and anti-United States stance. Iran has primarily the anti-Israel and anti-United States stance. Hamas, they're small enough they could care less about the United States, but anti-Israel. So that's what brings these two, what normally would be disparate groups, Iran and Hamas together, is their common desire to get rid of Israel. So Hamas, Sunni, attacks Israel October 7th, and Israel then responds to that attack and says, we need to wipe out Hamas. And that's been going on ever since October 7th, 2023. The current status of that is that Hamas is still there, but they have been destroyed enough that they are unable to do any significant damage, have any significant attack in Israel. They just simply can't. And so the people that were displaced along what's called the Gaza envelope, right along the Gaza Strip in Israel, those people primarily, I think they would call themselves this, peaceniks, primarily people who wanted to have peace with Hamas. Those people have, that's who was attacked, they've come back. And so they've begun to repopulate that border with Hamas, with Gaza, because the border is now safe again for Jews to live in. And so they've come back. And within Israel, it is peaceful around Gaza. In Gaza, of course, another story, as the IDF, Israeli Defense Force, continues to work in Gaza to try to get rid of more Hamas and to try to get the hostages back. There's still about 100 hostages held by Hamas and other groups in Gaza. So that's what's happening on the south. In the nation of Israel, fairly safe, fairly secure, back to kind of normal, although will things ever be normal when you've gone through that kind of attack? There you go. Let's switch over to the next area, North Israel, Lebanon. Lebanon is a failed state. It is a conglomeration of Druze, which Druze is kind of a strange religion. It's a very secretive sect. There are Druze that live in Israel. When we go to Israel, we go and eat at a Druze restaurant up north in Israel. There's Druze that live in Lebanon, and there's Druze that live in Syria. Part of the Druze religion is that they will be supportive of whatever nation in which they are living. And so the Druze in Lebanon are supportive of Lebanon. The Druze in Syria are supportive of Syria. The Druze in Israel are supportive of Israel. There's really two sets of Druze in Israel. There's one set that borders Lebanon, and there's another set of Druze that border Syria. So intermarriage within the Druze, but there's kind of two groups of Druze in Israel. Anyway, so in Lebanon, Druze, Sunni Muslims, and Christians. There's also Shia Muslims that live there. Many of those have come from Iran. And Iran has really allied themselves with the Shia Muslims living in Lebanon, who are Hezbollah. So you've heard of maybe Hezbollah in the news. Hezbollah has really kind of taken over the country. And the Lebanese government is essentially a failed government. Hezbollah has so much firepower because of Iran giving it all this this firepower. Why? Because it is an Iranian proxy, again, to fight against Israel. Well, if you followed the news over the last few months, what's happened, beginning with the pager bombers, the pagers blowing up simultaneously for all the Hezbollah leaders, is that Israel has decimated Hezbollah. No one outside of maybe those in the security services of Israel saw this coming. There was great fear because Hezbollah is far more powerful than Hamas in Gaza. Hezbollah in Lebanon is far more powerful because they are naturally allied with Iran. They're both Shia, so Iran was feeding Hezbollah far more weaponry and was able to get it there because they could take it across Iraq, Syria, and into Lebanon. Israel has decimated Hezbollah in Lebanon. Not that it doesn't exist, but they do not have the ability, near the ability they once had, to attack Israel. It was thought for a long time that if Hezbollah ever decided to, they could decimate and perhaps take out Israel. But that's no longer believed to be the case. Can they do damage in Israel? Yes, but not nearly what they could have done 3 months ago. So that's a great development, really, for peace in the Middle East, is that Hezbollah has been really defanged. They can still cause trouble. So about 2 weeks ago, there was a ceasefire agreement put into place. And so kudos to all the people that worked on that, including people from the Biden administration. Ceasefire put in place between Hezbollah and Israel. And part of that agreement is that Hezbollah will withdraw beyond north of the Latani River. And I've drawn out the Latani River, so to speak, on the map so you can kind of get a sense of that. But that Hezbollah would no longer be able to have any fighters or any munitions or anything on the border of Israel within about, I think it's about 15 miles north of Israel is the Latani River. The idea is that an October 7th type attack could not happen any longer. This has been a United Nations policy. United Nations voted to have this happen 20 years ago, but it never happened. The United Nations never enforced it. Israel is now going to enforce that. The agreement, the ceasefire agreement, the 60-day ceasefire agreement that's going to take place, is supposedly the Lebanese forces, made up of Druze and Sunni and Christians, are going to come in that gap south of the Latani River and enforce the fact, keep Hezbollah out of that area north of Israel. Now, whether the Lebanese forces can do that or not is another story, because Hezbollah, even with all the damage that Israel has done to it, is still stronger than the Lebanese forces. So we'll see what happens. There's been a couple of violations of that 60-day ceasefire agreement. Israel has responded forcefully, powerfully to those violations. And in the last few days, there has been, as far as I've heard, no violations by Hezbollah. So I think they got the message that Israel was going to enforce that. They weren't going to mess around this time. And at the end of 60 days, so it'll be about the end, about January 20th or so, about the time that Trump is inaugurated into office, somewhere around that day. The end of the 60 days is in place. And by that time, Hezbollah is supposed to be north of the Latani River. And the Lebanese military is supposed to be in that gap between the north, northern border of Israel and the Litani River. At that point, the people, the probably 70, 80,000 Israelis who've been displaced from the border, the northern border, will begin to return home. They've already begun a little bit, but that will they'll begin a lot. That process will complete itself pretty quickly. In fact, as I'm recording this on Thursday, December 12th, the two northernmost national parks in Israel along the border of Lebanon are reopening today. Tel Dan, the old city of Dan in Israel, and Caesarea Philippi. Those parks are both opening today. Why? Because there is a sense in Israel that it's now safe to travel to those parks. That has not been the case since October the 8th, 2023. So great news on the northern border. Great news on the southern border of Israel with Gaza. There's still things going on, but within the borders of the nation of Israel, there is, for the first time in well over a year, there is peace within the borders of Israel. Now, in the last 2 weeks, an amazing thing has happened in Syria. The Assad regime, the dictatorial regime of the Assad family, has been overthrown. There has been civil war in Syria for the past 15 years, but it's come to a stalemate. Syria is a country, like Lebanon, a conglomeration of different groups. There's Alawites there, a very small minority. There are, which is another branch of Islam, but very, very small. Sunni Muslims, Druze, as we talked about. There's Christians, and there's Kurds living in Syria as well. The United States has kind of aligned ourselves with the Kurds in that process. So I think we have about 900 of our U.S. military stationed in Syria, and they are aligned with the Kurds. So what has happened over the last 2 weeks is the Sunni terrorists, and in fact, the leader of these Sunni terrorists has a $10 million bounty on his head from the United States. The Sunni terrorists have taken an opportunity that was given to them by Israel and have basically kicked out the Assad government. The Assad family has fled to Russia. And now the, well, that country is in a lot of flux. It's really a failed state at this point, but we'll see who winds up on top. Couple of things about that. Well, let me continue on with what's happened historically here. So the Sunni terrorists took over. They're ex-ISIS, basically, ex-Al-Qaeda, because they broke with Al-Qaeda and ISIS. But nevertheless, they're still Sunni and they're still terrorists. They still have the leader still has a bounty on his head from the United States. I think it's $10 million that he's a wanted man because of his alignment previously with Al-Qaeda and the ISIS terrorists. But in any case, the Sunnis have taken it over. But why was that possible? Why suddenly, after 15 years of civil war, within, I think it was within days, these terrorists were able to take over the whole country? Why was that? Well, here's why. The Assad family, the Alawites, were propped up by a couple of countries, Iran, Russia, and on the other side, Hezbollah, not a country, but allied with Iran. So basically, the Assad family was able, through its dictatorial, terroristic practices, to be able to have a firm grip on that country because of the support it received from Iran, from Russia, and from Hezbollah. Now think about what's happened since October 7th. Since October 7th of 2023, Hezbollah has been basically destroyed. Russia is completely unable to function anywhere else in the world because they're so consumed with the Ukraine. So Russia was unable to come to the Assad family's help. Iran has also seen its star go down quite a bit over the last year and a half. Well, not quite year and a half, year and a couple of months, because not only has Iran lost its ally of Hamas, not only has Iran lost its ally of Hezbollah, but Iran itself has been attacked by Israel. Why did Israel do that? In response to Iran attacking Israel. And so Iran itself has been, well, not defanged, but it is extremely weakened. And so all of Syria's protectors were either preoccupied in the case of Russia, weakened in the case of Russia, I suppose, as well, or weakened or almost done away with in the case of Hezbollah and Iran. So you have the situation where the Sunnis then in Syria were able to rise up and take over the country of Syria. What's happened then is Israel then has gone in over these last couple days and destroyed 80% is the estimate, 80% of Assad's military, his chemical weapons, his air force, his navy, all of those things are gone. So now Syria poses no threat to its neighbors, at least for the moment. For, you tell me how long, a couple years, 10 years, I don't know how long it'll be. But right now, Syria poses no threat to its neighbors because all their weaponry, their heavy weaponry has been destroyed. There's still a lot of guns running around, but their heavy weaponry has been destroyed. Their air force has been destroyed. Their navy's been destroyed. Their chemical weapons have been destroyed. And so the Syrian power has been laid waste by Israel as a preemptive strike so that those things would not fall into the hands of the Sunni terrorists, and then you would wind up with all kinds of problems. Israel has also gone into the demilitarized zone between Israel and Syria because there was an agreement between the Assad government and Israel to have kind of a demilitarized zone between those countries. That demilitarized zone was, well, it wasn't really a demilitarized zone, but it was kind of an area where Assad's military would not go into in order to assure Israel that there was going to be no problems. With the Assad government gone, Israel has gone over the border into Syria, into that area, just to assure the people that are living in northern Israel that Syria will not attack, that these new Sunni terrorists who are taking over will not attack into Israel. So to assure them, to give them a sense of security, Israel has gone in there temporarily. It would be my sense that once a government is established in Syria, then there will be negotiations between that new government and Israel. And Israel would like to withdraw back into Israel proper, withdraw its military, as long as there's an agreement in place that Israel feels confident about, that there'll be no attacks coming from Syria. So, lots of things going on over there. Some people ask, why are all these factions there in the Middle East? Like this nation of Syria has Alawite and Sunni and Druze and Christian and Kurds. And why are all these? Well, all these people are lumped together in countries that are really not countries. They never were countries. They were part of the Ottoman Kingdom before World War I, the Ottoman Empire. And after World War I, the Ottoman Empire, which allied itself with the Germans and therefore lost the war, the Ottoman Empire was carved up and given to Great Britain, France, etc. And rather than allow these tribes to become independent tribes, what happened was these European powers cobbled nations together that really weren't natural nations. Syria is not a natural nation. It's a group of tribes. The tribes don't get along with each other, and so that's a problem. The same thing happens with the country of Jordan. The same thing happened with what is modern-day Israel in the West Bank and Gaza. Again, two different groups of people in the case of Israel, Jews and Arabs who live there. And that was what Great Britain tried to do with the case of Israel was to not cobble that together, but instead give the Jews certain land on which they were living and give the Arabs land on which they were living. The Arabs did not accept that agreement, and then we go on from there, which we don't have time to talk about in this video. But in the case of Israel, the European powers, specifically Great Britain, tried to avoid putting these different tribal groups together. In the case of Syria, in the case of Lebanon, in the case of Jordan, in the case of Iraq, the powers that be in Europe did not separate the tribes, but put them together in the same nations. And that's in large part what's caused the problems within those nations. So where do we stand today? This has taken more than 20 minutes. Sorry, we'll try to wrap this up. But where do we stand today? In the case of Israel and the situation there, or rather in the whole Middle East, we stand on the precipice potentially of opportunities for, you never have peace forever, but a significant time of peace. Why? Because there's a strong man in the region, and the strong man currently is Israel, and that's a good thing. So there's a possibility, if these other peoples will grab hold of it, for peace to happen in the region, for Syria to just worry about Syria, for Lebanon to worry about Lebanon, for Gaza to worry about Gaza and for Israel to worry about Israel. However, there still are some challenges that could be looming around the corner. A couple of those challenges that we need to pray about. One is that Iran does not see itself as, well, I'm sure it sees itself as almost defanged. It has been defeated in the whole Middle East region. And when a nation like that sees itself defeated, what do they tend to want to do? Well, to strike back. And the only way Iran can really strike back effectively is with a nuclear weapon. And so we need to pray even more fervently that Iran is not able to get a nuclear weapon. If they're able to get a nuclear weapon, obviously that changes the whole ball game in the Middle East. So we need to pray about that. We need to pray that Iran is still able to ship weapons across Iraq. Let's take a look at that. Iran is still able to ship weapons across Iraq, but they're no longer, at least for the moment, able to ship weapons across Syria towards Israel. However, we want to pray that they cannot and do not ship weapons through Jordan somehow, get weapons through Syria. Where they're trying to get weapons as we speak today is into the West Bank. Because the group running Syria will no longer allied with Iran, but those Arabs, Palestinians living in the West Bank would be glad to get Iranian weapons and use them against Israel, just as Hamas did. Even though they're Sunni, they're not naturally allied with Iran, they would be glad to get weapons. What's happened because of the takeover in Syria by the Sunni Muslims is that the land bridge from Iran to Iraq to Syria to Lebanon to Israel, the land bridge of weaponry has gone away. And we need to pray that that land bridge continues to be cut off, that neither Jordan nor Syria allow weapons to pass through their country. Iran can get those weapons into Iraq because they're Shia Muslims in Iraq. We got to pray that they cannot get those weapons through Syria and Jordan. And that will be a great boon for peace in that area. We also need to pray about the nation of Turkey. Turkey, as you can see on the map, is a large nation. It has been flexing its muscles, as we talked about in the beginning of the podcast, of late. And Turkey has an opportunity here, if they so choose to take it, to have great influence in Syria for good or evil. It would appear that they may be wanting to use that influence for evil, and that would be a bad thing for the Middle East. So we need to pray for that. So the three things we're praying for is Iran not to get a nuclear weapon, for the United States and Israel and other nations in that area to stand up against that, for Iran not to be able to ship weapons across Syria or Jordan and continue to destabilize the Middle East, and for Turkey to not get involved more than they already are, which they already are, but to not get involved in Syria and not continue to try to see themselves as the beginning of a new caliphate in that area. All right, well, that was a lot. I hope that helps you understand a little bit of what's going on in the Middle East today. And again, if you listen to this with audio and said, well, I'm having trouble following, jump onto the YouTube channel, just search for Eagles on the Hill, and you'll be able to find the video there. I'll have it linked. Of course, it's one of the recent videos. I'm just putting it out on Friday the 13th of December, but I'll also put it in the playlist under Israel and Hamas. You'll be able to find it there in future days. All right, write us at eaglesonthehill211@gmail.com. Let us know questions you still might have about the Middle East or other topics you'd like us to cover. Remember that those who hope in the Lord will soar on wings like eagles. Thanks for listening to the podcast today.